Grandfather Bhishma. Has successfully pacified Maharaj Yudhisthira . One of the main themes from this morning's class was that he expressed, based upon assessing whether or not you, Maharaj Yudhisthira, or any one of us, have lived our lives according to the codes of theistic conduct, whether we have been properly under the guidance and direction of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas in a submissive way, and that our purpose has been to satisfy the personality of Godhead. When one lives one's life in that way, Maharaj Yudhisthira, as you have, there is no reason, no cause for lamentation. One who has lived one's life in that way and difficult situations arise, accept it as the influence of time, which is none different than the Supreme Lord and the plan of the Supreme Lord. The events caused by time are not readily discernible, so don't go there trying to figure it out. Hey, what's going on? Just accept it. The events of time are moving us all, pious and impious alike. Accept that direction, perform your duties within that arrangement of time. Another theme was showing his concern and respect for the Pandavas and Queen Kunti, the difficulties that they had to endure, that, no, what's the explanation for it? They had done no wrong, so they were in this virtuous position. So the affectionate grandfather was very happy to see them in the position as the rulers of the world. Then where we ended was he's glorifying Krishna because he's a devotee. He just glorifies Krishna. So this Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead beyond creation, Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha, the super soul of all living entities, he's manifesting and moving about amongst us as if he's one of us. Those who think that he's one of us, they're deluded by his potency. There are those that understand the Lord's position, the Mahajans, and they can understand his glories, so we spend some time. These glories are manifested in the shape of the ecstasies of serving him, the ecstasy of Mother Jasoda in the position as superior to him, the ecstasy of Arjuna in the position of as his friend but Krishna as his subordinate chariot driver. And this ecstasy or this glory of Krishna, that he places his devotee into some difficulty and then relieves them of that difficulty. to show the world that virtue, those who adhere, regardless of circumstance, those that adhere to virtue, Krishna will protect, and therefore they will always be victorious. Wherever there is Arjuna and Krishna, there's sure to be victory. This is one of Krishna's glories. Glories that are disclosed through the exchanges of intimate relationships of service and served. The glories of Krishna are disclosed by that. And the glories of the devotee are also disclosed through the intimate exchanges of loving service. So that's the summary from this morning. Bhishma Dev continues, O King, he's addressing Yudhisthira. Question? No. O King, that personality whom, out of ignorance only, you thought to be your maternal cousin, your very dear friend, your well-wisher, counselor, messenger, benefactor, etc. Ha! He's the personality of Godhead. So Krishna played these various roles or leelas with the Pandavas and particularly with Yudhisthira. Maternal cousin. So Krishna is the maternal cousin. Through Kunti and Vasudeva, their cousins. Your very dear friend, Krishna always acted as partial to the Pandavas, the friend of the Pandavas. Certainly their well-wisher, their counselor. Krishna would, they would consult Krishna what to do in different difficult circumstances. Krishna would give his recommendations. Like Krishna gave his recommendation that before the Rajasuya Yajna, they should finish off Jarasandha. What's the meaning of having a big ceremony where one is declared an emperor and there's big powerful challengers out? Finish the challengers first. Messenger. Krishna volunteered to be the messenger to carry the message of peace to Duryodhana. Benefactor. The idea is Krishna's serving his devotee Yudhisthira and acting as just a regular person of the world, but he's the personality of Godhead. So Bhishma Dev understands this, and Bhishma Dev is informing the others again and again in different circumstances. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. So imagine what it was like. How can we do anything but imagine such a thing? Bhishma Dev is relating to Krishna, all the while clearly understanding that he's the personality of Godhead. Never getting bewildered. Always understanding he's the supreme personality of Godhead. I mean, what an experience. Like question that was asked earlier, when Bhishma was making sacrifice for his father, how do we know that it was done in Krishna consciousness? Because it was his grandfather Bhishma. Being the absolute personality of Godhead, although he's standing right here, he is present in everyone's heart. He is equally kind to everyone, and he is free from the false ego of differentiation. Therefore, whatever he does is free from material inebriety. He is equal balanced. So, glories of Krishna, that's this section. When Krishna acts, so this is instructive for us when we hear of Krishna's pastimes. You know, people ask, why did Krishna do this and that? He's not restricted in any way whatsoever. And when he does this and that, it's not like we do this and that. He married 16,000 queens. He danced in the dead of night with. He played like a small boy. He killed people. So if any one of those things we tried to do, it's mundane. And anything that Krishna does, it's not. It's just joyful. Exhibition of Krishna's having transcendental leelas. Purposeful or not. That's Bhishma Dev's appreciation. So while he's in this transcendental position, he does things, just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I create this situation of the four guna karma vibhagasha chatur vana maya shrishtam guna karma vibhagasha. Krishna creates, but then he turns around and says, I'm the non-doer. Which is it? Does Krishna create or he's the non-doer? He does, but through the agency of his energies. He's the non-doer. He just wills things and they happen. And that's true in the material and that's true in the spiritual realm. So there's no contamination of the modes of nature. There's no fruitive intention. There's no implication in karma. There's nothing mundane about his activities, as there is with us. The rules that apply to us do not apply to Krishna. And there's no rules that apply to Krishna. At the same time, he's equal to everyone. He doesn't have to be equal to everyone. He says that's his nature. He's equal to everyone. And he's free from the false ego of differentiation. Prabhupada writes in the purport, because he is absolute, there's nothing different from him. He is Kaivalya. There's nothing except himself. Everything and everyone is the manifestation of his energy, and thus he is present everywhere by his energy, being none different from it. Well, that's pretty unique. You can't say that about anybody else. Read a book distribution story. There was a man, the devotees, it's from here in India, the devotees had set up a book table displaying Prabhupada's books at a train station. And people were coming and going, and the devotee had this sound amplification device that went along with their permit to have the table. Come and get your Bhagavad Gita. It's Krishna's message as it is, and so forth. And as the trains would come out and people going in, they would come and look. And the devotee described that one man just stood there in front of the table, just looking at the devotee that was behind the table, not even looking at the books, and just smiling very contentedly. And the devotee didn't know what was up. You know, maybe the man's crazy, or maybe the man just appreciates how he's selling so many Bhagavad Gitas, or what. And after there was a little bit of a lull, he turned to the man and said, "Sir, would you like Bhagavad Gita? This is Krishna's words, as he spoke 5,000 years ago." And the man, same smile on his face, said, "These books are about me. I don't need to read them." And the devotee thought, you know, boy, a real Mayavadi. And he went on and on, and then he invited him again. He said, "If the books are about you, then maybe you'd like to read about yourself." And the man closed his eyes and said, "The sun and the moon and the stars and the wind and all existence moves at my will." And we thought, this man is in big time delusion. And he just kept standing there, just looking at the devotee. After some time, the sound amplification device broke, and he tried to fix it, couldn't fix it. Said, then turned to the man and said, "Tell you what, since everything is moving under your direction, do you think you could get this machine to work again so we can tell everybody about your glories?" Took the machine, fiddled with it for 20 minutes and couldn't get it to work. Gave it back to the devotee. And the devotee, you know, said, "Frankly, just see. You say everything is moving under your direction, but it's obvious that it's not. But it's obvious that it is moving under someone's direction." And preached to him, and the man ended up taking a Bhagavad Gita and one other book and was walking down the street looking, reading Bhagavad Gita, as it is. How do you go? So we can't make this statement as Bhishma Dev is saying here, that we can about Krishna. We can't make the same statement about everyone, about anyone, that everything that exists, everyone and everything that exists is a manifestation of one entity. And therefore there's an absolute or a kaivalya relationship between all things and this one person. You can only make that statement about Krishna. And everyone else is under his authority. Ekala Ishwara Krishna Arasabha Britya Nityo Nityanam Chaitanash Chaitananam Eko Bhuvanam Yo Vividati Kama. These Vedic statements are there, indicating same thing. And imagine, Bhishma Dev clearly understood this. As he was looking at Krishna and the Pandavas and everything's happening under his direction, he is the super soul of every living entity. And that's the Paramatma feature. Here is the same entity in the Bhagavan feature. So the entity in the Bhagavan feature one can have relationship with. In the Paramatma feature one can meditate upon and understand the universality of life. But in the Bhagavan feature one can serve and understand further about the glories of the personality of Godhead. And on the strength of that mood of service, Bhishma Dev was able to disclose these glories. The sun is identified with every inch of the sun rays and every molecular particle of the rays. Similarly, the Lord is distributed by his different energies. He is Paramatma, the Supersoul, present in everyone as the supreme guidance, and therefore he is already the chariot driver and counsel of all living beings. Got that? As the Paramatma, he's already giving guidance and direction, counsel. As the Supersoul, he's the counsel of all living entities. He's the chariot driver. The intelligence, he supplies the intelligence that allows every living entity to do whatever it is that we do. If Krishna shut down the intelligence program, we'd be dullards. But if Krishna gives intelligence, then we can give there some direction to what we do. He's already in that position as Paramatma, but then in direct and discernible ways as Bhagavan, the personality and Godhead, we can serve him. It's nice, this is just a little appreciation, it's nice as devotees to recognize that Krishna is supplying intelligence, that Krishna is residing within our hearts. If we just were tuned into channel Krishna instead of channel Maya, we could receive, we could directly receive indications from Krishna. So, leaning towards Paramatma realization is certainly transcendental, far beyond delusion of Maya. But the personal realization goes beyond that. That same Paramatma within manifests himself in personal ways, so that Mother Jasoda can feed Krishna. How do you feed Supersoul? Mother Jasoda can dress Krishna. The cowherd boys can play in the field with their bugles and buffalo horns and climb trees and leapfrog and wrestle and swimming and herding cows and making the sounds of all the forest animals and dance together. And the gopis, conjugal love. How do you have conjugal love with Supersoul? Conjugal love, friendship, parental affection, Bhagavan. And so it may appear to be human-like, and persons that are in material consciousness think it's either mythological or something. But it's the form of the Lord, Bhagavan. In Bhishma Dev, he's got it. And he's expressing it. He's the Mahajan here sharing with Yudhisthira and sharing with us what the position of Krishna actually is. When he therefore exhibits himself as chariot driver of Arjuna, there is no change in his exalted position. It is the power of devotional service only that demonstrates him as the chariot driver or the messenger. So Prabhupada is expanding on what Bhishma Dev is saying. Our acharyas, in their commentary, that's what they do. They take these perfect statements and just help us to understand them and apply them practically. It's the medium of serving Krishna that allows us to realize his glories, his qualities, and directly relish them, not just intellectually understand them. Through the medium of devotional service, we can experience these things. So all glories to devotional service. Now, scriptures are there to guide us, so we don't just go off in la-la land somewhere and just imagine different things. We're guided very carefully by scriptures. But the purpose of these scriptures, once again, is to keep us properly directed in the path of devotional service, so that through the medium of devotional service we can understand, we can realize Krishna directly. Now I have a little post-it note here. How does this apply to us? We're aspiring devotees. We'd like to enter into our loving relationship with Krishna in a glorious way. We'd like to manifest the glories of Krishna in the course of our life through our devotional service. So we're not qualified like Bhishma Dev. So just toss in the towel, right? Just, this is for great souls and not for ordinary living entities like us. No, not so. The message is, the universal message of scriptures is, Krishna reciprocates with the love that we have, any living entity has. Yayatamam prapadyante tang sadaiva pajamyaham. Krishna will manifest himself according to the love and devotion that's within the heart of the devotee. That with whatever love and devotion is within the heart of the devotee is manifested through or as their devotional service. And Krishna is the rest and support of that devotional service. It's Krishna manifesting himself, or his internal potency being manifested. And when, as we advance in devotional service, as that love and devotion grow and intensify and magnify and amplify, Krishna becomes more and more manifest. But at least for each individual devotee, Krishna manifests himself according to, proportionate to, the love and devotion that we carry. And at each stage, that's very satisfying, isn't it? Like, even for a neophyte devotee, it's just a little glimpse of Krishna. Even what Rupa Goswami describes in the beginning stages, there may be abhas, some little reflection of happiness, little realization about Krishna. We've all had something that's keeping us going. But that's not the fullness of Krishna. That's something. And that something keeps us going. And so on and so on in the path of devotional service. As much as we can handle, Krishna gives himself to us. We're just not ready. We've got our resistance filters on. We have our attraction to other things going on while we're trying to advance in Krishna consciousness. We have our attachments to other stuff. And so Krishna discloses himself proportionate to our surrender. He's ready to give himself to us completely at any moment. We're not ready for it. Or say it the other way. As much as we're eager for the fullness of our relationship with Krishna, Krishna's ready. I mean, think about it in terms of your own experience. If you're trying to be an assistant of Lord Chaitanya's mission and spread Krishna consciousness, and you find interested people, as much as those people are interested, you're ready to give them Krishna consciousness. Yes? So from Krishna's side, he's ready to give himself to us. We're like, students in eagerness that you show to the teacher to learn, the teacher's ready to give to that eager student. Right? Yep, they may have many students, and out of many students, one is really an eager learner. You give special attention to that student while you teach the rest of the students. And it may look like partiality, but it's only natural. So from our side, the practical messages, from our side, whatever it is that we have in our hearts towards Krishna, Krishna is reciprocating with that. We just, our attention needs to go to how much attraction, how much affection, how much eagerness for serving Krishna we're carrying. Krishna will reciprocate with that. And through that medium of service, the glories of Krishna become manifest. We like to refer to Srila Prabhupada in situations like this. How much was he able to manifest Krishna consciousness in the world? I can say from, you know, the time that I visited in Vrindavan when Krishna Balaram Mandir was first opened, none of the stuff that you see all over the place existed. Vrindavan was, you know, a little place. Like right across the street from the temple and up the way as you're heading towards Mathura. Those are just fields. Now it's big palatial things, people with their residences and apartments and billboards, and, you know, just like, you know, anywhere else you go. None of that stuff existed. We're just a quiet Vrindavan. The attention that was drawn to Vrindavan largely was the attention that the Western devotees coming to Vrindavan put Vrindavan on the map. Now it's congested and buses and horns and noise and construction. I mean, but Prabhupada made Vrindavan the land of Krishna manifest in the attention of the whole world. So powerful. And what's the power? The power is the power of devotion. And each one of us has that potential. The purpose of reading and hearing, reciting and absorbing ourselves in Srimad Bhagavatam is to have that devotion awaken, come out. And that's what Bhishma Dev wants to do with the Pandavas, and Vyasa wants to do with us. Krishna, the Supreme Person, who's with the Pandavas, not ordinary. He continues, yet despite his being equally kind to everyone, he has graciously come before me while I'm ending my life, for I am his unflinching servitor. Krishna has come personally just because of me. It's not, you know, I'm special. It's Krishna special. Krishna knows I'm his unflinching servitor, and therefore, although he's independent, he's free to do whatever he wants, he's chosen to come here. So that as I'm passing, just as my heart's desire, I can see his face, his beautiful, smiling face with beautiful lotus eyes. To my heart's content. So this is one of Krishna's glories. He reciprocates with the love of his devotees, and externally it appears therefore he's partial. He's equal to all and partial to his devotee. Those are apparently contradictory statements, but they're not. You're either equal or you're partial. You're partial or you're equal. But you can't be equal and partial. Krishna is equal and partial. Because it's not like from his side, oh, he's my friend, then I'll be his friend. Oh, he's my enemy, I'll be his enemy. Krishna, that's partiality. But Krishna is indifferent, but when someone approaches him as his enemy, like Kamsa, Kamsa is thinking of me as his enemy, okay, I'll be his enemy. Not like, oh yeah, okay, I'll show Kamsa who's tough. It's not inimical. It's just reciprocating. Like when Krishna entered into the wrestling arena of Kamsa, the wonderful, wonderful verse that our acharyas speak about again and again, how in 10 different ways different persons saw the same Krishna completely differently. The yogis, they saw him as super soul. Kamsa saw him as fear personified. The elders saw him as the darling young boy. The gopis, it was exciting their hearts, the young girls, in conjugal love. Vasudeva and Devaki, our son. And so on. Each, according to their disposition, saw Krishna. And for them, Krishna was what they wanted, what they saw him as. So, in the case of Bhishma, Bhishma is the unflinching servitor. He's going to choose to leave his body. Krishna is going to be there so that as he leaves his body seeing Krishna, guess where he's going? To Krishna. Because his mind is fixed on Krishna. And Krishna is helping him to have his mind completely fixed on him. How kind. How loving is Krishna. Prabhupada writes, the Supreme Lord, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, although equal to everyone, is still more inclined to his unflinching devotee who is completely surrendered and who knows no one else as his protector and master. Having unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord as one's protector, friend, and master is the natural condition of eternal life. Those are symptoms of surrender. In case you didn't pick up on it. In Padma Purana, there are 6 symptoms of surrender. 3 of them are mentioned here. Those who are surrendered to Krishna see him as their protector, their friend, and their master. This is the natural condition of eternal life. A living entity is so made by the will of the Almighty that he is most happy when placing himself in a condition of absolute dependence. Most happy. In the material world, if you're absolutely dependent, that's bad. You're a slave. That's bad. And spiritual life, that's good. It's best. Absolutely dependent upon Krishna. Doesn't like mean, you know, you can't do anything, you're catatonic. You can't think, you can't speak, you can't act, you can't move. Because you're absolutely dependent. Very active. Devotees are maybe too active. Very active. But in the consciousness of being completely dependent upon Krishna. That's the best position. Completely dependent upon Krishna. And one is most happy in that condition. Now, why is that? Why is it that we're happy in that way? It's our natural consciousness. The next paragraph goes down the path of what happens if you're not feeling yourself absolutely dependent upon Krishna. You're an illusion. You're thinking independent of Krishna. And that's thinking apart from Krishna. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Lord Vishnu says to Brahma, "Know that as my illusory energy. To think that something exists having value unto itself apart from Krishna, know that as my illusory energy." So, the spiritual energy is to see the value of things is in relation to Krishna, because Krishna is everything. There's where our absolute dependence lies. It's a fact. We don't exist. Nothing exists except through the manifestation of Krishna. So we're fully dependent upon Krishna. The opposite tendency is the cause of fall down. The living entity has this tendency of falling down by dint of misidentifying himself as fully independent to lord it over the material world. The root cause of all troubles is there in false egotism. Now, the final paragraph of this purport, Prabhupada looks at, well, maybe Krishna was coming because he's related to Grandfather Bhishma and it's his relative that's dying, so he's coming because he's his relative. Prabhupada writes, Arjuna had some bodily relation with Krishna because the Lord happened to be his maternal cousin. But Bhishma had no such relation. Therefore, the cause of attraction was due to the intimate relation of the soul. Yet, because of the relation of the body is very pleasing and natural, the Lord is more pleased when he is addressed as the son of Maharaj Nanda, the son of Yashoda, the lover of Radharani. This affinity by bodily relation with the Lord is another feature of reciprocation of loving service with the Lord. You caught that one? There was a family relation between Krishna and Arjuna, but that wasn't the basis of their friendship. The basis of their friendship was the transcendental affection of friendship that Arjuna had for Krishna. And with Grandfather Bhishma, there wasn't bodily relation. So for sure, in Bhishma's case, the affection for Bhishma was just on the strength of his devotion, Bhishma's devotion for Krishna. But when you put these two things together, Krishna likes very much, or he appeared as the son of Nanda and Yashoda because of their affection for him. Krishna enjoyed that affection. Krishna enjoyed being chastised, chased by a stick. Although it appeared he was afraid and cried, he enjoys that more than defeating demons, exhibiting his prowess and smashing them. As a small child, he defeated many demons, and Krishna enjoyed that, but he more enjoys being chased by the stick of Mother Yashoda. He enjoys when the devotee takes the superior position because of their affection, not any other reason. Just the intensity of love is so great, they take that superior position. Somebody asked this question. The other day, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was planning to make his visit to Vrindavan from Puri, he traveled, he said to the devotees that there are two shelters in my life, my mother Sachi and the river Ganga, and I'd like to go take shelter of my shelters. So I want to go to Navadvip before going to Vrindavan. So he never made it to Vrindavan because on the way he stopped at Ramakeli, which was actually another reason why he went in that direction, so he could give his association to Rupa and Sanatan. And after being in their company, Sanatan made this suggestion that it's not a good idea for a sadhu to enter Vrindavan with thousands and tens of thousands of followers and elephants and chariots and pomp and splendor. Go alone or with one person, entering the sanctity of Vrindavan in that way. So Lord Chaitanya said to the devotees, the next day, when I was in Kanai Natashala, I considered the words of Sanatan, and he was right. So one devotee asked, isn't there something wrong here? Is a devotee like Sanatan to give advice to the Lord? This is good conduct and that's not good conduct. Isn't that offensive? And the answer is, in normal circumstances, that would be offensive. The disciple doesn't give instruction to the guru. But in this case, the intimacy of love of Sanatan for Lord Chaitanya and the special qualifications that Sanatan had as a minister and so forth, he understood these things. And so it was in service, very much like Damodar Pandit would also instruct Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya marveled, said, Damodar, who is there in the world but you that can give advice to me? You have such love for me that you can do like this. So Mother Jasoda has such love for Krishna, she can chase him with a stick. And it's not offensive. If you think of who Krishna is, that's offensive, chasing Krishna with a stick. We can't do that. That's offensive. We're bound by regulations of sadhana bhakti. But on these higher platforms of intimate love, there's spontaneous love, where the rules of Vaidhi sadhana bhakti may not be followed. One shouldn't imitate. One will fall down if one imitates. Then it's sahajiya. But when one is on such elevated stages of Krishna consciousness, such things happen. So Krishna likes when he's referred to as Nanda Nandana and Yasoda Nandana or Giri Paradhari, his relationship with Govardhan Hill. Or Kaliya Krishna. According to Bhaktivinod Thakur, these are primary names of Krishna, names that invoke love for Krishna. when chanting them or hearing them, when it's describing Krishna in relation to his devotees, or Krishna in relation to his dham, Vrajendra Nandana. So, similarly, Bhishma Dev is acknowledging Krishna's coming is just because of his affection for me. And why Krishna's affection for Bhishma? Because I'm his unflinching servant. And so he's come. He's disclosing, Bhishma Dev is disclosing Krishna's glories. And if we're alert, we'll pick up on it. What a wonderful master to serve. This was like Uddhava's response when Vidura met Uddhava in the forest, just after Uddhava and Maitreya had finished hearing from Krishna the whole of Uddhava Gita. Krishna departed. Uddhava's in this completely satisfied and completely devastated mood. Satisfied, he's just been with Krishna and this wonderful exchange has taken place. Devastated because Krishna's now gone, and that's it, and he knows it. Vidura finds Uddhava and he asks Uddhava, can you describe, you've been so intimately related with Krishna, can you describe Krishna to me? He asks him a whole bunch of questions. Uddhava just waxes into this mood and goes on for a whole chapter just glorifying Krishna, glorifying Krishna. Krishna outside of Vrindavan, Krishna in Vrindavan, in two chapters, just from this question. Can you tell me something about Krishna? He just presses his Krishna button. In his first verse, he says, Who can there be in all of existence as a more kind master than Krishna? Krishna, when he was approached by Putana to kill him, he simply saw her maternal affection as approaching him as mother. And because she had some maternal feelings, when Putana saw little Krishna resting, what a beautiful child. Her motherly affection, Krishna accepted. He overlooked, and she's come to kill me. He killed her as she was approaching him in that disposition. But he accepted the mood of motherhood and gave her a position in the spiritual world as one of the assistants of Mother Jasoda in the spiritual world in Vatsalya Rasa. Who can find a master like that? What master is there like that? That's where he started speaking. So Bhishma Dev's similarly disclosing the glories of Krishna. What a glorious master. I was fighting against his best friends. I took a vow I was going to kill his dear most friend Arjuna. And I was firing arrows like anything to kill Arjuna. And Krishna's come on the battlefield now that I'm dying just because he knows I'm his unflinching servitor. Do you know of a better master? Same. It's disclosing the glories of Krishna. The personality of Godhead who appears in the mind of the devotee by attentive devotion and meditation and by chanting the holy name releases the devotee from the bondage of fruit of activities at the time of his quitting the material body. This kind of goes without saying, or it's a subset of what he's already described. So we may not see Krishna come and stand before us, but we can know the application of this when we remember Krishna, devote ourselves to Krishna, chant the name of Krishna. The reciprocation of Krishna is there. In that act of devotion, Krishna is reciprocating. And what is that reciprocation? He dissolves our material association and affinity. This is Krishna's nature. Can there be a better master than Krishna? Or say the same thing in a different way. Is there any name that you can call on and have that happen? There isn't. There is not. The names of the demigods, calling them, cannot do this. You call the name of Krishna with sincerity of purpose. This is what happens. What? Is there a better master? The long-standing material contact that sages and tapasvis and transcendentalists aspiring for liberation may strive for many lifetimes. It's accomplished just by this. Is there a better master? Please consider. Take Krishna as your master. Worship Krishna. That's the message. He's describing why he does what he does, and he's encouraging the Pandavas in their spirit of devotion. He's encouraging us. This is what a great soul does. He just encourages us on the path of devotion. And wise souls will take advantage of that encouragement. I'm going to end with that. There's only one more verse in this Bhishma's citing glories of Krishna, and then it starts another section. Krishna is so kind that he accepts Putana as one of the assistants of Yasoda in the spiritual world. Yeah. Prahlad Maharaj performed only little devotional service in his previous life, and look what happened. What about us? Yeah. What makes the difference between us and them? What's the verse? Yena tena prakarena. So the intensity of attraction for Krishna makes the difference. Rupa Goswami's teaching is that somehow or another become attached to Krishna. Putana was, Shishupal was, Kamsa was, attached to Krishna in an inimical fashion. So, Rupa Goswami reasons, look what destination they achieved for the intensity of the disdain for Krishna that they had. So, devotional service, he doesn't recommend that we have disdain for Krishna. We have attraction for Krishna. in a positive. We want to serve Krishna and please Krishna. But that should become strong. So in the same way, in devotional service, in a favorable way, we should do it in a very enthusiastic and strong fashion. In such a, it would, however it happens, yena tena pakarina, however it's done, fixed upon Krishna.
He was fixed. Now we're out of the womb. We're adults. We're in Vrindavan. So the facility, the opportunity is also there for us. Now different souls amongst us, even in the assembly right here, different souls amongst us may take the opportunity in greater or lesser degrees. And it's the same opportunity, just different eagerness, different degrees of eagerness for achieving spiritual objective. Therefore,
we should be eager to achieve the spiritual goal of life.
And that's, you know, for us, in a favorable way. Okay? Yayatamam prapadyante is the answer. I can't read. Why did Krishna give mukti to devils? Okay. Well, the answer to that is the engagement in devotional service is already on the platform of mukti. The engagement, we're all being engaged very, very mercifully in devotional service. As long as we continue to remain engaged in devotional service, we're on a liberated platform. If we continue for our lives engaging, striving for devotional service to Krishna, that's a liberated platform. You're asking the same question he was asking in reverse. In the case of the demons, they were fixed on Krishna. Their mind, Kamsa, didn't think anything day and night, while eating, while ruling, while sleeping. Krishna was on his mind. He wanted to destroy Krishna, but it, you know, so it wasn't favorable. But his mind was absorbed in Krishna. Because his mind was absorbed in Krishna, he achieved liberation. He got relieved of the reactions of his inimical attitude by being killed by Krishna. But that, you know, he achieved liberation. his mind was fixed on Krishna. It's not that Krishna only gave liberation to the demons. He gives liberation to those who fix their mind upon him. This way or that way. Yena tena prakarena. By some means or another, fix your mind upon Krishna. So, in our case, practically, we're trying to fix our mind. We're doing what we're doing right now so that we can fix our mind upon Krishna. I was thinking about this all morning. Why are we here in Vrindavan doing what we're doing? It's to purify our existence. It's to absorb our thoughts in the messages of the Bhagavatam and the glorious devotees, particularly Bhishma. And fixing your mind on the glorious devotee Bhishma, it's purifying. You know, it's striving on our side towards the eternal abode of Krishna in a prescribed manner. And we're trying to do it in a very focused, enthusiastic way. So it's not that Krishna doesn't give the same opportunity to his devotee. The opportunity is there. Go ahead. That's very easy to answer. Krishna's leaving them was to intensify their love for him. It looked like something else. It may even have felt like something else to the gopis. But that was the purpose. To intensify their love for him. There's Leela involved in the whole thing. But the bhava is to intensify their love for him. In Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, Ram is describing to Sita the Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which he would experience in a future yuga. And Ram describes, "My dear Sita, when I appear in Kali Yuga, I'll appear in a golden form, and I'll accept a beautiful wife named Vishnu Priya, and that's going to be you. I'm going to leave you, and I'm going to leave my mother, who will have no shelter but me. Her father, her husband, and her other son will have already departed, and I'll just leave her to take sannyas." And Sita says, "My lord, why would you do such a thing?" And he explains, "Vipralamba bhav." By the mood of separation, love is enhanced. As they will miss me, I will miss them. When Krishna left Vrindavan, this is disclosed in Rupa Goswami's writings and Sanatana Goswami's writings, Krishna was feeling the same separation for the gopis that the gopis were feeling for Krishna. Intensification of love. In separation. So this is a transcendental reality that non-transcendentalists have a hard time wrapping their minds around. You know, it looks like pain. Looks like sorrow. Looks like unkind treatment. But for the transcendentalist, the understanding is it's Krishna's, one of Krishna's ways of intensifying, magnifying, amplifying love. And there's so many, 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 many examples of it. Something else? Yeah. The question you're asking is, how do we establish this is the real and that's perverted, as opposed to vice versa? That what Krishna does is transcendental and what we do is perverted, whereas they may argue, well, how do you know it's not the other way around? What Krishna does is perverted and what we do is pure? That's your question. The standard that Rupa Goswami uses, like the measuring stick, is the selflessness versus selfishness. So that's the standard. In the case of the gopis, like one of the classic examples is their willingness to go to hell for the happiness of Krishna. For the relief of Krishna's headache, take the dust from our feet, we'll go to hell, that's okay. Quick, take, give. Or the queens that violated the instructions of their husbands in order to bring that queens, the wives of the brahmanas, that brought prasad for Krishna and the cowherd boys. And when the wives went back to the brahmanas appreciated, you know, you're the realized souls. We're doing all these rituals to propitiate the personality of Godhead. But when he came personally to request something, we insulted him or his representatives. But you understood, and you've received his mercy. To us, you are worshipable. So they weren't thinking in terms of ritual or elevation or their particular position of birth. They were attached to Krishna in a selfless way. So that's the standard. Where there's male-female attraction on this material plane, it's selfish. And when it's on the transcendental plane, it's not. It's completely selfless. When Radharani is having her swing pastime, Jhulan Yatra, with Krishna, she recognizes that My dear gopi friends, they also please Krishna. So she places the gopis on the swing, and she swings the gopis. And she derives happiness by the gopis sitting by Krishna's side, being on the swing. Where does that exist in the material world? They accept because Radha wants, but they know that no one can please Krishna like Radha, so they want Radha to be in that position. And there's no enviousness, no jealousy, no selfishness. There's transcendental exchanges where this gopi speaks to that gopi, but it's just for the purpose of intensifying the affection of Krishna. Qualities a woman should have according to Vedic culture if she is unmarried, and what is the meaning of shyness, how to cultivate. We were discussing this recently in relation to Krishna's re-entering Dwaraka and the shyness of Krishna's wives. It's not just an unmarried woman should be shy, a married woman should be shy. A woman should be shy, married or unmarried. The queens, when Krishna was gone for a long time and he entered into the city of Dwaraka, he went to pay his respects to Vasudeva and Devaki and the other co-wives of Vasudeva and treated them all equally as if they were his mother. And then he went, he expanded himself into 16,000 Krishnas and entered into each one of his palaces. As he entered into the palaces, the queens who were in meditation upon Krishna, in his absence, the shyness was manifested in the following way. They had not gone outside of their palace for any social reason because their husband was not there. Krishna was not there. So they stayed at home. They didn't seek social anything. They didn't decorate themselves, dress themselves nicely, because what's the purpose of decorating, dressing nicely? The pleasure of their husband. This shyness is the mood of in the mood of service to my husband. Now, in the case of an unmarried girl, what is that shyness? I don't go here and there to attract young boys. I don't go there. That's just the shyness. But in the case of the queens, their shyness was they didn't go outside the palace, and when they got word that Krishna had come, they were feeling shyness. They were feeling unbounded affection for Krishna. So they first reached out to Krishna with their hearts, and then with their eyes they saw Krishna. And through their eyes, Krishna entered into their hearts. And then they sent their sons to embrace Krishna, with the understanding that the son is, from the body of the mother, the extension of the mother. So the embrace of their sons with Krishna was like embracing Krishna. But it still wasn't complete, our acharyas describe. And so they were still feeling their emotions, but they tried to check their emotions, but the checking of their emotions of wanting to show their affection for Krishna was like a pressure cooker. So it just finally it burst out in the form of tears, but they were trying to hold back their tears because it would be inauspicious crying before their husband. And all of this was due to their shyness. So what is shyness? Shyness is keeping internal um, the attraction that one has for Krishna and exhibiting that attraction for Krishna in appropriate ways. And Prabhupada has so many times, over and over and over again, said, this shyness is the most attractive quality of a woman. A man may be attracted to the physical features of a woman, and that's lust. But when a man sees the quality of shyness in a woman, then it invokes respect. Prabhupada told this story about the shyness of a woman from his own personal experience. When he was a businessman, he had a business meeting in an office. A number of big industrialists, whatever it is, business people, had a meeting. And when they finished their meeting, they were just adjourning the meeting and they were standing by the door. And the cleaning lady, carrying her bucket, just stood there silently in a shy before these big business people. And they all, seeing her, they parted and she went in to do her cleaning. And Prabhupada said, I could then understand, this is the power of a woman. It's her shyness. Because she had, get out of the way, I've got to do my cleaning. It's coming through. You know. That's not shyness. And she would have not been respected, but because of shyness, she was respected. And these big men stepped aside, respectfully let her through. She didn't say a word. She controlled their behavior by her shyness, so to speak. She invoked their respect for her by her shyness. So the shyness is a certain reserve, an internalization, a holding internal in social decorum, one's own feelings and attractions for Krishna, and staying fixed in that mood, in a humble, shy mood. Specifically, in the relation to Krishna's returning to Dwarka, it said that the queens, not only they didn't go outside the palace for social exchange, but they didn't engage in laughter, because that's like an external demonstration of something. So they restrained themselves from that. Their shyness restrained themselves even from their tears, because they didn't want to disturb greeting their husband with tears. Even it was tears of affection. But they couldn't help themselves. Their feelings were stronger than their shyness, and they cried. So the shyness of an unmarried woman is not mixing freely with men, unmarried or married. And whenever there is dealings, it's done thoughtfully and carefully and with self-restraint for the purpose of service. Particularly, this principle of shyness is in relation to the members of the opposite sex. So an unmarried woman should be very circumspect in that regard. And it doesn't mean that married women, now they have a license to be frivolous and mix freely with unmarried and married men, because I'm married. That shyness protection should also be there in exchanges with others. By hearing, I would understand that one should genuinely, respectfully serve the devotees with humility and make advancement, to make advancement. But I don't find that mood in myself, and even I commit offenses towards devotees. What step should I take to change my heart in that direction? Well, kind of a self-evident question. You know, you hear and you follow the example. You hear and you follow the instruction. You see examples of those that do have this quality, and you follow the example of those that do have that quality. You hear and glorify the activities of those that have that quality. You remember those devotees and those qualities. And so that's our process, hearing and chanting and remembering. And that quality, by that hearing and chanting and remembering, that association with that quality develops within you. And that quality, association with that quality comes, and the quality then develops within you. And pray to Krishna. I like to do temple services very much, but I don't have very strong, genuine desire to please Guru and Krishna while doing services. Question: is the goal of doing services my sense gratification? No, that's not the goal. Jiva Goswami comments in Bhakti Sandarbha, and it's quoted in the sixth canto, chapter 1 of the Bhagavatam, that preliminary to ecstatic love for Krishna is simply the desire to do service. We find, like this description, there are devotees that like to do service. Serve, and they may not be so fully fixed in Krishna consciousness, but they like to serve. So that's good. And in that serve mood, gradually, by association with the message, that the mood of that of your service is also very important, it will seep in. So the purification that comes from service, at least elevation of through the modes of nature, to the quality of goodness. Then when there's contact with elevated personalities, representatives of Krishna, then some attachment for those representatives of Krishna will come. Same, very much the same answer to this prior question. Yeah, same question over here. Anything else?